Let's do a podcast, eh?
I mean, we can. We're already here.
I think we should.
She made the whole world want to dance. She bought herself a second chance. We are hottest 100s and thousands. And guess what? We've still taken control of your radio station. This is the podcast in which we talk about the songs that have been deemed hot enough to be in the Triple J Hottest 100. My name is David James Young. I'm one of the four voices you're going to be hearing for the next hour or so. Joining me once again is Adam Buncher.
Hello.
And Nathan Harrison.
Hello.
Joining us today, the final piece of the kind of Big Hero 6 fucking group chat elite, you know, the most recent addition to the crew, but one of the most vital parts of it since we met, what, like 5-6 years ago? It's been a minute.
Something about that.
You might recognize those dulcet tones from a myriad of different podcasts, such as The Simpsons Index and Thrones of Game and Pulp Fury Radio. I think I'm remembering that.
That's
one.
That's the one.
And what else? Except when he's not the Patreon exclusive podcast. Have I forgotten any?
Yeah, there's a bunch on the Patreon, but you've got to pay for them.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/SideQuest Studios. Getting in my plugs early.
There he goes. It's Elliot J. O'Neill.
That was the best and most professional introduction that we've done.
For nine seasons.
Yeah.
All it took was
That was the most we've ever sounded like a real podcast.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Bing. Do you want to join the fucking up? Bing. And we're back.
Is that all that ad says? That'll work.
Yeah. What's it called?
Superliminal advertising.
Superliminal advertising.
Yeah. Was on that show, I like, yeah.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that.
SAS. Yeah.
If SAS indeed stood for Simpsons, all Simpsons. Oh, all right. It's a weird one. This is the reunion tour / the farewell tour. So it's just like the gang's all back together, but only for a finite period of time before we all have a massive infight and pursue our solo careers. And
ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait for what the title cards over the credits say what we're up to these days.
Yeah, that's good. We're like this all the time. And you know who else is like this all the time? Motherfucking Gorillaz. Here they are at number 15. This is 19-2000.
It's spinning too fast. I'm bundled like his shoes to keep myself tethered to the days I tried to lose. My mama said to slow down. You must make your own shoes. Stop dancing to the music. I'm good. It's in a happy mood.
They're the biggest band in the world and they don't even exist. At number 15, that was Gorillaz with the song 19-2000, which comes from their debut self-titled album. Look, I gotta say, that lead singer is so familiar. I have a vision of him. It's a very unclear vision.
I think we can work it out. Let's assemble a think tank.
We'll separate
into girls and boys.
Yeah, girls and boys.
You were already there.
Oh yeah. Like when you've been doing it this long, there's no distance left to run.
Park life.
Now, of all the people to talk about this song,
I think the best one is Nathan Harrison.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, yeah. Can you start with a gorilla fact?
I would love to start with a gorilla fact.
I believe I'm remembering this right. The scientific name for gorilla is gorilla gorilla, which
love
is
that.
Great. But we don't know how strong gorillas are.
It's
like my favorite. Other good gorilla thing is that they hum when they eat, and they all have different songs for different foods, which is very cute.
Get the
and it's like, so good.
But we don't know how strong gorillas are because there's no way to actually measure that. We know they're very strong.
Feats of strength.
There's no safe way to measure that.
Yeah, there's no safe way to measure. A very strong human can what? Like bench 300 kilos? Like a strong?
A very strong.
Very strong human.
Very strong human.
Gorillas can comfortably bench 1,800 kilos, and we don't know what the upper limit is.
Okay, well, I have questions about how...
their form and all of that.
No.
What kind of pre-sup they're doing. But gorillas in a zoo is a very kind of like uneasy truce of like, they could probably break out, but hopefully we'll just make it nice enough that they won't want to, and that's enough. And then sometimes they do, and we're like, well,
nothing we
couldn't
do about
stop that.
Didn't some get out in Newtown before the pandemic? Am I remembering
baboons.
That wrong?
Baboons. Baboons.
Much different.
Medical baboons.
Medicinal.
True. True. Yeah, they wanted to join the Freedom Rally.
They were being tested on, so they probably were very anti-vax.
Yeah, they're allowed to be.
Yeah, that's
I think.
Fine. Do you remember, like, I mean, I was about, what, 13, I think, at the time. Like, I don't think I knew about Blur before this. But do you remember, like, gorillas starting and being like, what the fuck is this? This
it
weird,
was,
like...
It was, like, game-changing. Yeah.
This kind of cartoon band that, like,
I knew Song 2. Like, I knew Song 2, but, like, I did not put Song 2 and 2 together. Yeah. Seeing this on the screen, like, thinking, oh, it's like a Saturday morning cartoon. But they're playing instruments?
Yeah, this whole thing and, like, the kind of weird... removal of the artist from the front to being this kind of weird producing guy. Like, that in pop music felt very new.
Yeah.
Like, I know it was happening, and I think there's obviously a lot of threads to draw with a lot of, J-pop and K-pop. A lot of kind of digital artists and artists that are not real. Also,
and comic
obviously,
book stuff, like the Archies. Like, yeah, the Archies had a hit single. They weren't
That's
real.
That's right.
Yeah, Sugar Sugar.
And then obviously, like, you can kind of loop that round now to, like, ABBA. And like all the weird hologram stuff is coming.
Hitsune Miku?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, who is like a fictional artist with songs.
I mean, I love the thing, the cultural artifact about Hitsune Miku, like really quickly, is that anytime there is a problematic artist attached to a piece of art that you really like, it's just like, oh, did you know that the Harry Potter books were actually written by Hitsune Miku? And there are people who go into bat for that.
Removing Notch from Minecraft and just being like, oh, we don't know who made Minecraft.
Probably Hitsune Miku.
Yeah, probably Hitsune Miku.
Does anyone remember LCD? Not LCD sound system, LCD.
The television?
No.
What they call a CD in Spanish?
This was a computer-generated group that had they were billed as the world's first digital supergroup, and they had like a hardstyle electro version of the Greek traditional song Zorba's Dance.
Oh. Were they really bad CGI?
Oh, they were horribly CGI.
Fantastic. And can I be honest, it's about time that we have a revival of that particular song, because if my memory serves... it kind of goes hard.
Astronomically fucks.
It's weird, I think, just thinking now in terms of the sort of pop music and everything, there aren't more bands like Gorillaz. Like, I think Damon Albarn kind of, he has that. Like, that's...
he just did it so well that no one else was just like... Okay.
I think anyone else trying to do that now, you'd kind of be like, oh, like the Gorillaz. And so it meant that no one has sort of done it.
Well, the Guinness World Records officially certifies this as the most successful virtual band.
Yeah, sure.
Mm.
So, but you were spot on what you were talking about, the sense of... it being larger than life, and that being particularly, I remember that experience as a kid as well, like seeing it on screen. It's not as if we haven't seen animation in a film clip. That's
not
new. But when you find out, no, that's the band. That's them. And all of a sudden...
and they have lore.
Yeah.
That's backstory.
It. Mythology.
We love some lore.
Yeah. If you go on the Gorillaz Wikipedia page, there's like the band's like virtual history and then their actual history. It's just like, oh yeah, Damon Albarn and this guy Jamie Hewlett who made Tank Girl.
That's right.
Like, they started collaborating, making stuff together. And then in the fictional version, it's just like, well, fucking Murdoch the bass player was living with this guy 2D, and they call him 2D because he's got two dents in his head where his eyes should be because he had a fucking car crash. They mail ordered their guitarist Noodle. She like turned up in a crate and just started playing.
That's so good.
And they also have a drummer named Russell Hobbs who's possessed by a demon.
Very cool. That's,
who's played by Del the Funky Homo Sapien.
But even just from there, like, my brain is drawing the parallels. It's like 2D, oh, it's like a David Bowie reference. The drummer being possessed by a demon is like a Spinal Tap thing. It's like there's all this kind of almost like hyperlinks that you're inserting into the lore and whatever. And I think it's so interesting that you, Nathan, picked up about, you know, saying about the construction, artificiality, boy bands, or that kind of thing, because the other link that we have there about the two living together, well, that was the case for Damon Albarn and Huey. They were housemates and they were watching MTV one day, and it was just based on watching it that they went, this is kind of like this artificial hellscape. And let's just lean into that. Let's create a band that actually represents that one for one. And that's exactly the idea that they had to create the Gorillaz.
Very cool.
Very cool. It's so wild, isn't
they
it?
Missed the whole brief of making shitty music, though. These fucking tracks are so good.
Yeah. So let's get into 19-2000, which I'm assuming was the second Gorillaz song that everybody heard.
Yes.
Probably. Now, there are two versions of this song that were obviously a huge part of our growing up, which was this version, the studio version, which was the kind of slower, groovier version, and the FIFA version, the remix, which was tacked onto the end of the record, which was used in like FIFA and like a bunch of other video games and all that sort of stuff, which was like way more upbeat and like. Played more on radio and that sort of stuff, because like. It's a weird radio choice, the first one. Like, it's like that with that weird, like, boom bap, like, Damn the Automator beat, and like.
Real, like, kind of slow walk down the street, kind of.
It's sort of like really dark as well.
To me, what I get is just kind of like enforced positivity.
Yeah, all the lyrics. It's like, oh, like the world is changing so much. Even 19-2000, like turn of the century.
Yep.
Everything's going too fast. I'm feeling very disenfranchised. I don't know where I belong. I'm feeling like really not like a person. But I could buy these cool shoes.
And not only that, I'm being told I should. And I keep smiling.
And that's how I'm happy. And like, obviously, we can't relate to any of those feelings
not
now.
Really. No.
But at the time, you know.
I have terrible shoe shine. I can't get it.
And even like, I love the cool shoe shine line, because the very first line is talking about how he feels so adrift and so lost that he feels like he needs lead shoes to stay grounded on the earth. Mm. And the response from the world is, don't forget your cool shoe shine. You can buy that for only...
Which is quote-unquote sung by Noodle.
Yeah.
It also makes it sound like an advertiser as well.
Yeah. Exactly. And also, like, I think the role of the individual is very important in this song. Is someone who is going up against the forces of the world and they feel ill at ease. And it's almost as if, you know, this other person... singing along gives the feeling like everyone else is having fun, man. Why aren't you? Why do you feel so ill at ease? You know, like there's a party going on all the time. Why aren't you partying? Why do you feel like partying? And it's represented in the music as well, right? Mm. It's like,
keep a mild groove on.
Well, it's happy.
Don't go too crazy, but keep a mild groove on.
But it's threatening to like break apart at any point.
Yeah.
It's just barely kind of holding
so
on.
So haphazard.
There.
Yeah,
truly.
For sure.
So it's like you do groove, but you also feel ha ha.
Yeah, dude. About
for me, this is a real. Oh yeah, this song, and like there's always like a bit more in it than I remember.
I gotta say, out of the five songs that I was assigned to do today, this one is probably the most earwormy for me out of all of them. I just find myself just walking about day to day and just like all of a sudden get the cool and like
na 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 na.
It's got like of those little earwormy moments, like just
totally.
They just totally get into my system, and weirdly more than other songs, which I like over this one in this batch of five, this one was in my head more.
We've returned to this point many times about like how the goal of different projects unlocks different creative potential, even like a stated goal. And I think there's something about Albarn creating Gorillaz as this artificial band that's like, I've got room to do so many things sonically and take so many risks.
It can
risks.
Be whatever I want it to be.
And it's like, just there's the permission that's granted for the artist to do that.
Yeah.
And that comes across in everything Gorillaz do and have ever done. It's just like anytime
there is a... And continue to do.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah, the fact that this project has still survived and gone through all these different iterations, and even kind of had like this Renaissance period now. They have such a universal appeal. Like, you can be like, oh, you know, it's the fun cartoon band, but you can also be like a diehard, like have the tattoos, know all the backstory kind of group. And they've been that way for literal decades.
I think it's also like how broad, which goes back to the freedom that Damon has because of this project. Like,
yeah,
all the collaborations that he's got, he's been able to do through this. Yeah. He's just like, he's just making music, and it's all gorillas, and it's pretty like clearly this one thing, but it's so broad.
And you know what I think he's unlocked is immortality.
Because
you
can't kill a cartoon.
Exactly. Exactly. Unless it's Brian from Family Guy. Big R.I.P. to the king, Brian.
What? They killed? Really? That's the thing?
But this that's was, the that thing. Was like they brought ago. Him back.
Yeah, they brought him back.
Oh, he was coming back.
Wow.
He's really on a show that actually has Jesus as a character. Like, he died, and then a few days later, they brought him back because, you know, there was public outrage.
Is that what happened to Jesus?
I don't know what version you're reading.
But the thing about gorillas is when you create the world, you choose where its edges are.
Yeah. Mm. Damon Albarn, he's what, like 51, 52, around that age? Like,
yeah, right.
Yeah. And he still gets to be in a countdown largely voted on by Gen Z because he's not Damon Albarn in this context.
You're right,
he's 2D. He's fucking Murdoch. He's Russell. He's Noodle. He's Cyborg Noodle. He's Ace from the Powerpuff Girls.
And I think as gorillas have gone on, though, I also think that Damon Albarn's voice has always been present, but it hasn't. It's kind of receded to the background in favor of other elements and other collaborations.
Yeah, like he's bringing in more and more people. Yeah. Like Tame Impala.
Robert Smith.
Beck. Fucking Peter Hook from Joy Division was on a track a couple of years ago, which was amazing.
We could spend the rest of the episode listing all those collaborations.
Thundercat? Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. My dude. I know this is a music focused podcast and from a music soundtrack.
Allegedly.
Barely.
But if anyone is interested in watching a show called Family Guy, then my DMs are open.
But did any of you watch the video in lead up for this? Because I remember at the time, watching this on Video Hits or Rage or whatever. And, you know, it's around the time, you know, I don't know, 3 years or something into N64 and PlayStation. And it kind of like looked like a video game the way it was animated.
Yeah.
I just got such a wave of nostalgia watching this thing and thinking, oh, fuck, graphics don't get better than this. But it was in this really cool 2D and 3D animated style, which is just... yeah, a testament to the band, you know, just thinking on multiple fronts like that and having the music to fucking back it up as well. Like, yeah, it's one thing to have a cool clip, but...
Yeah, Gorillaz could be half as good as they are. Easily.
And they'd still probably get number 15 in the last one. At number 14, this is Tool with the song Schism. Number 14 in the 2001 Triple J Hottest 100. That was Tool with a song called Schism. Hey, Elliot, what did you think?
Oh, my God, I fucking love this song.
Well, for better or for worse, what is a moment that stands out to you from this song?
Jesus Christ. Are you going to do the whole Simpsons
Index question?
You know
for a fact that I am.
Yep. I'd say the moment that stands out to me is the bass line as a bass player.
100%. All right, play count. How many times have you listened to this song?
Oh, Jesus.
four, five, maybe.
Yeah, at least, you know, I at least return to it once every couple of years.
All right, wackiness. Can you talk about the any if there are any like cartoon elements of this song?
Well, some might say the amount of time signature changes in this song is pretty cartoonish.
That is very true.
Most theorists agree they change signature 47 times, and that's a lot of times to change time signature.
Really? It really is.
Yeah.
Wow.
Is that number connected to the previous Tool song we talked about?
No. 46 and 2.
46, damn, so close.
One off.
Oh.
Then they definitely change 48 times. Let's just say that.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, when interviewed, they said this song is in... Actually, it's in 6.5/8.
And that's when I kicked him in the throat.
They're such trolls, man. Oh.
Aren't they?
It's so good.
Trolls.
This is the kind of Tool trolling that I like. Fucking Maynard dunking bacon into his wine just so it wouldn't be vegan friendly. Yeah, fuck that, Maynard. Oh. But this Maynard, this Tool, fucking masterful.
Yeah.
Like, the whole time signature changes, like, that's a sort of a fun fact about this song, but it's kind of like Pink Floyd's Money in that way, where it's like, yeah, you could call it 7/4, but really it feels like a group of four than a group of three. Mm. Same with this song. You could call it 12/8, but 12/8 is like a shorthand for like a swing beat.
Yeah.
You know, a da 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 da. That's not this. This is, you know, a group of five and a group of seven. And the way that they divide the beats actually has its roots in Turkish dance music, where you have a short and a long beat. So yeah, the 1-2-1-2-3, 1-2-1-2-1-2-3. That's all very reminiscent.
Yeah. So like clapping along with a dance. Yeah.
It should be played at more Turkish weddings, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
100%. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, my point is it's not as complicated as, whoa, it's got so many time signatures, dude. It all very much revolves around that. They add and subtract various parts, like in that sort of, for lack of a better word, chorusy bit. Like they switch it up to a group of six and a group of seven. And then in the bridge, it's more like a triplety 6/8 feel with like a bar of 9/8 stuck in there. Like, this is that thing that Tool do. They take something fundamental and then they fuck with it. Because for all the heady time signatureness of this, this is actually probably one of Tool's more conventional songs.
Totally. The whole time, like coming back to that, I haven't listened to this song for, you know, a hot minute or whatever. But like, this is such an accessible, palatable song.
That's the most I've ever enjoyed anyone talking about time signatures.
I am having to hold back because, like, you know, talking about it, the different ways we engage with music, one of the ways I like to engage is digging into the theory a bit. And time signatures are one of my bags. I love prog. I love Rush. I love Tool, Opeth. Bit mixed on Dream Theater. I don't think they do it quite as well, but...
I think that's a correct opinion.
Yeah. And I think it's sort of an underexplored thing in music theory is, you know, because music fundamentally is about tension and release. You know, that's how we get the satisfying moments. And I think rhythmic tension is still pretty underexplored. And I think Tool do a great way of doing that, especially Danny Carey, who is just absolutely on fire in this track.
What about the heart of this song? Did you feel the bumps?
See, and talking about it, our way we engage with music, I'm not a lyrics first guy. Like, it sort of just washes over me generally, and it's just part of the mood of the song. But yeah, I decided to take a deep dive into the lyrics and see what I could come out from this. And this is a devastating breakup song, man.
Right.
There's probably a wanky argument to be made that all the time signature changes and the tense harmony and all that. You know, this is all telling the greater story of this relationship that once seemed like right and two people in step with each other, but everything's now off kilter and like not settling in one place, hence all the changes or whatever.
I'll buy that take.
Yeah. I think that's another reason it resonated pretty well is because I think this is a pretty universal feeling that you find yourself with someone that like through no real fault, you just find yourself at odds with each other. That's sort of what I picked up from the lyrics anyway.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's a few devastating points that I kind of, while we're talking about the theme of the song and how that's communicated musically, that I kind of want to add in as well. One of which is like that the song kind of communicates that even fighting is better than silence and disconnection. Like even if you're fighting in tension, there's a beauty in the dissonance that you can find in that trumps absolute severance and connection. I love how there's that breakdown section that like really to me is just part of like a journey of like grieving that end of a relationship where you find yourself all of a sudden on your own and trying to process. And to me, I think the ultimate sadness of the song comes at the end, where instead of yielding and saying something different, you continue to insist that you know the pieces fit. I'm not letting go. I'm not yielding to this situation. No, I'm right.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the tragedy. The song is a tragedy.
And then it just suddenly ends. Like,
yep.
No fade out, no like sense of optimism. It's just fucking heavy, distorted riffs at the end. You can imagine that's like the fight. And yeah, same in that middle part you're talking about where the intensity's ramping up and he's like the metaphors with like a boxing match and bit of sacred geometry talking about squaring off and the circling and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but yeah. Of course.
Tool gun a tool.
Well, yeah, that's exactly tool. It. But I also think that communicates something really beautiful as well in the sense I heard recently this idea of talking about superheroes and fantasy stories is realism for kids. Because the emotions that kids feel and the extent that in which they are invested in things and the way that they love and feel compelled by things, like, that can only be represented with such a heightened depiction. And I think that in the grips of heartbreak and in the grips of grief and these huge kind of feelings, then yeah, you that can only be told with a heightened kind of story. You go to these esoteric kind of places. It may seem to you like this impossible spiritual puzzle that you're trying to solve. So like I buy using that language to communicate that theme kind of truthfully.
And once again with the video as well, using the fucking, of course, weird fucking puppet people with strings and shit coming out of their skulls and Adam Jones gonna Adam Jones.
Yeah. It's like you're never gonna make a normal one, are you, Jonesy? They're all just sitting there. It's just like, we wanted you to just have the band performing in the room.
He's already got a lump of clay in the corner. He's like, what?
What? But overall, does this feel like a Tool song?
I'm glad you asked this because since listening to this for the last month or two quite intently for this, I think this is Tool's magnum opus. I think this is the most Tool that Tool have ever Tooled. I just think this is Tool just on their absolute top form and like whatever they intended to do with this project, I think it is best achieved in this song. Not necessarily my favorite Tool song, but it's certainly up there. But just all the elements are coming together so well. Like I said, Danny Carey's on fire. This is an all-time bass line.
Like, It's like one of the final bosses of bass.
But it's one of those riffs that you can pick up. Like doing the rest of the song is a fucking ball ache, but because when I was first learning bass, you know, this was around the same time, and all of my non-bass player friends would be like, oh, give us a go and give them the bass, and this would be one of the first things that would come up.
It's like guitar stores have no stairway. Fucking pianos, do you know what the piano one is? Like
for release?
No. It's Someone Like You by Adele.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because everyone comes in and fucking plays it. I reckon at bass, it's just like, no schism. Fuck off. So would you listen to this again?
Fuck. I'm going to listen to this again after you guys leave.
Yeah. You're upset you're not listening to it now.
What playlist would you put this song on? What kind of playlist would you put this on? Like, what other songs would you kind of pair it with?
Oh, this is going in my big prog mix of, like, awesome time signature changes songs.
Yeah,
I'm throwing this in with some Rush, probably Hemispheres. King Gears, thank you. A little record on the wall giving me
Hell yeah, Nonagon Infinity, baby.
Well, yeah. question on that. Would you also put it in a breakup playlist?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Like, yeah, fucking harpoon in this.
Yeah, it's a hell of a jump going between the two, but fucking, you know what? Sometimes that just captures the mood, you know?
Yeah, 100%, man, 100%. Is there anything that you would change about this song?
Nah.
Nah? You don't want to bust in with your five string and be like, I probably would have done it a bit this way. Boom, ba-da, bum, 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 bum. What's the deal with the pieces fitted? No, the Fibonacci sequence, get back to me when it's not that. What? I'm trying a new hour. Not all of it's gonna work.
I don't know if it was made clear, but DJ's reading the questionnaire that I ask on the Simpsons Index for every episode. And
niche jokes.
And also a plug.
Yeah,
it's a good bit. The what would you change question, like, We do the same thing. Every time we do the new episodes, we go, oh, here's the things I'd change. I am such a smart person. And then we watch the classic episodes, your cubic zirconias, and those episodes, I don't know, Marge versus the Morrowell, Summer of 4 foot two, you know. You watch those episodes and you go, no, me dumb. I don't change. This perfect. I back away.
Who like, the fuck am I?
Yeah. And that's what this song makes me feel. Like I ripped on Dream Theater before is because like when I listen to them, I'm like, did you really have to go there then? Oh, I like that section. Oh, why is it in
another
this bad
keyboard
song?
Solo? Cool. Yeah. Cool. I loved the first one.
It's time to rank this thing on Hottest 100s and 1000s. We rank songs by, let me see if I can remember how to do this. All the way down the bottom is failure. And then it's bronze. Oh, no, wait, no. There's participant.
Yeah.
The participant is in between failure and bronze. And then it goes silver, gold, and up the very top is cubic zirconia. So, with that ranking system in mind that I just came up with, I'm the Thomas Edison of this shit. How would you rank this song, Elliot?
Oh, top marks. Cubic zirconia.
Cubic zirconia. Nathan, how would you rank this song?
I think for me, like, it's not a song that I love, but it is a song that I'm like, this is like such a perfect marriage of what, like, you know, this is form and meaning have reached ultimate communion, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I like gold. I can happily give this gold.
I will also give this gold. Like, yeah, this is a song that I, yeah, will continually kind of come back to anytime that I am in this brief window where I am able to fucking just dive in on Tool, because like I treat Tool mostly the same way that Tool treats Tool, which is like, I'm all in on it for months on end, and then I don't even think about it for years.
Dude, when like they finally came onto Spotify and other streaming services, that kicked off I'll just listen to a couple of tracks, and then kicked off a Tool binge that lasted like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It was great.
Call this guy Tim Allen, because it was fucking Tool time over here, I'll tell you what. Adam, how would you rank this thing?
Give me that QBZ.
QBZ.
Yeah,
hell
time.
Yeah, brother. That shit rocks. Yeah. Are you gonna justify that rating, or just everything you've said speaks for itself?
I can justify it pretty much by agreeing totally with everything that Elliot said. You know?
I'm pretty
that's
smart.
I think that's the first time that what he said has been used in the podcast. So yeah, like,
that's what he said.
Yeah, we're still innovating after all these years. Much much like Tool themselves. And number 13, this is Something for Kate with Three Dimensions.
You're not the first to
Something for Kate coming in at number 13 in the 2001 Hottest 100. That is the song Three Dimensions, which I believe is the second single off Echo La 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 La. Yeah.
I love this placement because speaking of time signature changes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Is it a 9?
You could think of it as a 4 and a 6, but to me it sounds more like 2 bars of 4 followed by like an extra 2 4 at the end. Yeah. Anyway, it's all interpretive, whatever.
Obviously, long-standing history with this band and this lead singer who I have impersonated on this show many times.
There's one.
And we'll continue to do so. I don't have the same relationship to Something for Kate that I do to Tool, because
I would hope no one does for everyone's sake.
Yeah.
Well, because I was saying before that, like, I can, like, go all in on Tool and then they're just gone for, like, ages, right? Whereas I feel like I'm listening to at least a handful of Something for Kate songs, maybe probably every month.
Yeah, like nuts. Yeah, you have a handful of nuts.
I don't always go back and do like a full record.
Yeah.
but like there's always like something of theirs in the playlist. They are a very constant part of my life, and I feel like that constance kind of started around this period where I was seeing them so much. I remember talking about this when we talked about 20 years. It's just like this dude in his fucking mid-20s with a fucking soul patch. Oh, I'm secretly a fucking mastermind that knows, you know, everything about like the human condition and social interactions and like
feels it all, man.
Atoms and philosophy and all this sort of shit. It just fucking gets me every single time. Fucking three dimensions? Are you kidding me with that
shit? Is he kidding us with that shit?
Oh, the urgency of those guitar chops and just the way that those polyrhythms kind of clash and bang against one another.
Yeah.
And then it just comes together with that big fucking major key chorus that like, yeah, how do you create something where your lead singer fucking swallowed a fucking dictionary but is also able to create like a pop fucking chorus that everyone can sing along to?
Again, like this seems like a more simple song than it is on the than it actually is.
Yeah.
Like, cause even like I talked about the time signature changes in the verse, but the chorus, like, it's mostly groups of three bars, like still in 4/4, but like resolving on the third bar, which like
same as the dimensions.
Yes.
Oh, my dun, dun,
you know
dun.
What that reminds me of?
Tool.
Oh, the way that, you know, talking about tension and release before, that outro, it's so glorious. Like, it just, the arrangement of it all is so inspired. Like,
yeah,
it's one of these things where I'm kicking myself for not getting into something for Kate earlier on.
No, I truly believe this inside my bones that, like, now is the time to get into something for Kate. If I had discovered this band at any other time, I don't think it would have hit me in the same way, and I don't think I would have appreciated it. I just wouldn't have had the same depth of feeling on the same issues that Something for Kate are continually raising.
Yeah.
But now it's like I've, you know, that I feel like you've, the times where you're at a party or you happen to cross someone and in one sentence, you just know that they're the same kind of person as you. Okay, it's a bit dweeby for me to say that about Paul Dempsey, but it's like, man, like, you get it, dude. He just gets it. And it's, again, every single Something for Kate song seems to be a variation on the theme of, like, ennui or feeling adrift and dissatisfied in the world. And I think this is exactly what this song is about. Three dimensions representing the totality of experience and saying that you're both bored and in love with it. Because of course you are. What else are you going to be? That's life, baby. Like, that's what you've got. And even like this being the song that mentions the album's title, Echolalia, referring to a psychiatric condition where someone is like meaninglessly repeating someone else's spoken words.
Yeah.
To have that in an existential context is saying like that's you're just putting things out and life's just spitting it back at you and there's no kind of like inherent meaning attached to it. And it's trying to find your way through that. Like, this is the kind of emotional kind of stuff that goes into this song. And it just makes me feel such a sense of understanding and belonging. And, like, I can relax into that. It doesn't resolve any of the questions that I have, but it means so much that they are there and I'm hearing them. Mm. It's kind of like the positive side of the echolalia, I suppose.
To
put that out and to have someone go, yep, I wrote a song about it.
Nathan, what's your experience with this track?
I don't know why, but like this is not like a Something for Kate song that I reach for ever.
I'm glad that you fucking finished that. This is not Something for Kate song.
No, so this is by Tool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Are we not?
They're not real.
I know the pieces fit.
Oh, worth it for that.
But I think I'm very similar to you in a way. Like, I don't have as rich a history with Something for Kate, but they're definitely a band that, like, at least once a month, I will listen to half an hour of Something for Kate songs.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they scratch an itch that they scratch very, very well.
Yeah.
But this song, I'm like, I don't know. There's something about it. Maybe because it had a lot of radio play at the time, but, like, so did Monsters, and I love that song still. But this is just not, like, I will always listen to, like, 20 years... or Electricity or something before I go to this song. I don't know what it is.
Because no, like,
technically
it
is a good song and the chorus is glorious and all those themes that you're talking about, like, yeah, I really connect with that, but it's just not a song that I'm like, yeah, this is a great Something for Kate song.
No, it reaches for something different. I think it like reaches for a conclusion or a sense of positivity perhaps in that chorus that other Something for Kates maybe don't go for. And so maybe in terms of like, Elliot, what you were talking about, songs being about tension and release, this has more release than it does tension compared to a lot of other Something for Kate songs. True. So perhaps it's that you just personally are more drawn to Something for Kate at their more tense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If I was to guess. No,
yeah. I mean, I got to agree with the point earlier in that, yeah, it got flogged on the radio at the time. And like my enjoyment of this song now is having benefited from not hearing it a lot over the last 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. 20 years.
Oh. I made a funny.
I made a funny, but the joke's on me.
He's sounding older and older. This is a real
check on him?
He sounded like he was a fucking like weathered old man when he was in his 20s.
No, but now he's like, you know, Hemingway is Something for Kate. Like, he's really like
brutal.
Yeah.
See, he's been out fishing for a while.
He's not coming back.
At number 12, it's The Return of the Strokes. This is American Girl. Sorry, Last Night.
I thought this was You Can't Hurry Bob.
Oh, well, we'll just have to wait. Coming in at number 12 in the 2001 Hottest 100 with their signature song, Last Night, from their debut studio album, Is This It? Adam, is this it?
It's something.
It sure is.
Yeah. In fact, most of my notes are basically lists of like a bunch of magazines listing this in various different places in terms of it being one of the best songs that
not just of the 2000s but of all time.
My god, it is You Can't Hurry Love.
And
I got there,
and it also is more correctly American Girl by Tom Petty. And the Heartbreakers. The Strokes were pretty upfront about that being the case, and Tom Petty was even asked about it by Rolling Stone. And he said that when he heard that they admitted it in an interview, it made him laugh out loud. And he was like, okay, good for you. Doesn't bother me. So sometimes things work out.
I'm not mad.
Yeah.
don't put in the magazine that I'm mad.
Here's the thing, right? Tom Petty always let sleeping dogs lie while he was alive. Heard fucking The Strokes ripping off American Girl for Last Night. Didn't sue. Didn't say shit. A few years later, Red Hot Chili Peppers released Danny California, direct ripoff of his song Mary Jane's Last Dance. Doesn't say shit or doesn't like sue or anything.
It would have been really funny to go super.
Yeah.
The Strokes get a pass, but I'm taking you guys to the cleaners.
Yeah. After he dies,
the estate or whatever,
he comes back for revenge.
Sam Smith comes out with Stay With Me, that song. And Tom Petty's estate is just like, you need to list Tom Petty as a songwriter because it's the same melody as I Won't Back Down.
Yeah, that sucks. That happens so much.
That is not as cool as like him becoming a vengeful spirit, you know, like in a kind of mid-2000s horror film, teen slasher thing where anytime you write anything that incidentally rips off Tom Petty, he comes to you and causes trouble.
Like, you're like in the studio and like, no, I don't think we need to credit that. And then you hear like something, like a door slam in the background. You're like, what was that?
Yes. This is great. Mm-hmm. This is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a shame if someone stole it, and really ironic. So it'd be a joke to steal this bit and actually make a movie of it.
And right? not credit us.
That's a joke to do. So don't.
Yeah.
That would be really petty.
Talking about this song, maybe more than it is talking about any other Strokes song, it's worth bringing up the mission statement from Julian Casablancas about the Strokes, particularly in Is This It? He wanted to make a band that came from the past and took a time trip to the future. This is the Strokes at absolutely their most rock revivalism, which I can say at the time where I first discovered them, really confused me because I was not at all aware of any of the references that they were playing with. I heard this played on the radio and I just
you thought the Velvet Underground was a level on Mario 64.
It's also a good joke.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was good.
Very good.
Is that a Tool bass line?
There's a lot of time signature changes.
I was going to say that is a Mario's most prog song is
Do you want to quickly break down what's going on time signature wise in the Mario pipe?
We don't have time. We're already.
Wow, is that complicated?
We're going to be here for a while.
Patreon. Go to his Patreon. Exactly. This is going to be one of the things that he offers on the Patreon.
That's going to be a great Patreon.
Shit that's this high, it has to be paywalled. So, yeah, I thought that it was just an old song. I just thought it was an old song. I was listening to this as it came out, and I thought it was like a throwback song when it was played on radio because rock revivalism didn't make sense to me at the time, did not have the frame of reference.
Like, these textures belong with this style of music.
Mm. Right, truly. Yeah. And I think that as a bedrock set me up on kind of the wrong foot for appreciating it to some degree because even now when I go back to it, it is not one of my favorite Strokes songs, despite it being arguably the Strokes song for many people. If people don't know the Strokes, they are still going to get into this song. But that's personal preference, because objectively the song is perfect. It might not be your thing, but there is nothing wrong with this song. All of the melodies are insane. All of the production is insane. And like all of the performances are just there. So like, that's why everyone be listing it as one of the great songs of whatever era they happen to be making the list about.
Surprised it's not higher.
Yeah, right.
Like in this, you know.
Than 12.
Yeah. I think if you made lists of this year now, it would be much higher. And I think that's the case for like a while now. 12, I think, is fairly low for Last Night by the Strokes.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess it's like as hyped as the band were when they first came out and everyone was crowning them the saviors of rock and roll. I think
my spicy take for that is just that it's the first time in a few years that there's been a new band with an attractive male front man who isn't political. That all the magazines can be like, we can chuck Julian on the front. That's going to work.
Yeah, he's so brand safe. Julian's
brand
safe.
And that's the best way to fuel a rock revival.
Because even
that's my spicy take.
Wow. I honestly will purchase that take from you.
Being very cynical about it.
So there's numerous different comparisons in terms of like old school rock that is a touchstone. We've obviously talked about the deliberate Tom Petty one. But I think that an interesting one in terms of like maybe reevaluating the song and casting it in a new light is indie pop rockers The Morning Benders, that later became known as Pop Etc. They did a tribute. They were part of a tribute album for The Strokes. They did this song.
Yeah.
And their take on it was like, it's an early Beatles song.
Yeah, sure. I can see that for sure.
And I think that
you throw in a couple of ooh.
Truly.
And like the mild raucousness as well, because like, watching the video clip as well, which is actually kind of an inspired
mild raucousness.
Well, because they kind of get a little rough in the clip, but not really.
Some interesting crossover for the themes and lyrics of this song compared to other songs that we've kind of talked about. Weirdly enough, particularly Schism, because it's kind of about a relationship falling out, you know?
You're into girlfriends and spaceships? Fucking me too. They're just fucking sharing a joint backstage at like Ross Kilder or something.
But also like it's kind of about the inability to connect with one another as well. You know, here's a girlfriend trying to express feelings and basically Julian the lyrics is like, I don't know, man, and then just goes for a walk around New York City and feels mopey. You know, it's two people who really have some stuff to sort through but are kind of like too trapped inside their own circumstances in their own heads to kind of like deal with it. Like it's kind of very, very bittersweet for such a like jaunty tune.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because this is a like a rocky, dancey song as well.
Truly, it's a party song.
Yeah. Yeah, one where you finally get into the lyrics and it's like, oh.
Yeah, people don't understand. People are never going to understand.
Even spaceships.
On top of this, I ain't ever going to
understand. And he's not ever going to understand. If he can't understand.
There's this standing theory of like the first big hit of a decade that couldn't have been a hit the decade before is where the decade really starts. And I reckon Last Night is like a contender for that. Because like you look at the rock scene previously, you know, it was still in kind of that post-grunge hangover. You know, still a lot of Hunger Dunga Dang, a lot of like Day the New, a lot of like Here on the Shelf, on here on the phone.
Oh, and of course, a lot of My Friend.
My Friend! So the Strokes like very much stood out in like they were an alternative to alternative rock at the time, which is so interesting to think about.
You go from vaguely sounding like a goat to vaguely sounding like a goat, but with a little bit of distortion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, especially like the vocal production on this has got like that riot mic or like megaphone sort of tone to it that was very in vogue at the time.
The whole Is This It record, it sounds like he's in an old time radio. Yeah.
Well, I mean, to the point of like it could be a Beatles song, like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like that super, super lo-fi kind of sound. Yeah, 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 yeah. But I've always loved this song, you know, like this was obviously the first thing I heard of theirs and like seeing the video and just like just being beguiled and intrigued by this band. And yeah, similar to Adam, like at this point, you know, I hadn't really heard anything that sounded quite like them. And like, that's pretty funny to think about now, considering it's just like, oh no, like it's just like a handbook, like all their shit is from other shit. But by that same token, it's like a mosaic. You can take all these other little bits of artwork and then create an artwork in and of itself. Once you like step back, you're just like, oh wow, like you've created something really cool here just by taking different bits of all these other things and like creating, yeah, like a new thing out of that.
Because the proof of it is going like, well, in the end, does anything really sound like Last Night from the Strokes? Kind of not really.
Yeah.
It sounds like a lot of other things, but nothing really sounds like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nathan, do you have anything more aside from your hot take? You just dropping that and just walking out.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's a great song. Like, it's obviously, it's a great song.
Yeah.
I was going to come back to a point you made earlier that this song actually similarly kind of got me on the wrong foot with the Strokes. Because, like, I don't know, in quick succession, I heard this and Someday.
You heard this and you're like, 4-4.
But no, in quick succession, I heard this and Someday, I think, was the next single.
Oh, I love Someday.
They're very similar.
Yeah, they're very similar. And I don't think it was until, is the song called Juice Box?
That was the first single of First Impressions on Earth.
Yeah, that actually turned me on to the band and was like, oh, okay, well, oh, yeah, man, go back, check out the first album. Yeah, it's good shit, but like, I remember at the time I wasn't overly impressed with it, but yeah. Great song, still.
Hell yeah, dude. Smells like an invisible person taking a piss in here. At number 11, it's Garbage with Cherry Lips, brackets, Go Baby Go.
She gave you everything she had, but she was young and dumb. She just turned 21, she didn't care.
Coming in at number 11 in the 2001 Hottest 100 with Cherry Lips, Go Baby Go, from the album Beautiful Garbage. Garbage sell out in the most glorious, spectacular possible way that you can. This is the like the defining pop hit of Garbage's canon.
Truly.
And, you know.
Yeah, I guess some people would have been mad, right?
Lots of people were mad. Yeah.
Stay mad.
But not Australia.
Yeah. No. Oh no, we lapped this up.
Is this Proto Pink?
Yeah. Damn, that's so rough.
Well, cherry red.
Yeah. You work your way through the color spectrum. Oh man.
Or the red spectrum.
Yeah.
It's only a few steps, guys.
Now, Nathan.
David.
Thank you. We've discussed Garbage at length. Over the years, like basically every hit you can think of, like Only Happy When It Rains, Milk, Queer,
Androgyny,
like the whole 2.0 era, so like Special and I think I'm Paranoid. When I Grow Up.
A good handful of garbage tracks.
Yeah.
Across. So much garbage.
Yeah.
But, a lot of other garbage, am I right?
hey, it's the garbage here. I don't think.
Just anything ever like, hey, I'm garbage here.
Hey, I'm a piece of human garbage.
That's so Shirley Manson.
Hey, it's me, Shirley Manson from the band Garbage.
Oh, Shirley, don't talk that way about yourself.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, okay, I'm
Shut
sorry.
Shut your pile.
I'm sorry, Shirley.
I'm only happy when it's pissing down right.
Go, baby, go.
Go, baby. Let's go Mets, baby. 1986 can't happen again.
Actually, this song is used as a drop in sporting arenas for...
Hell yeah.
For the Milwaukee Brewers.
Go Brewers. Yeah, baby. Cherry Lips.
Cherry Lips.
How about it?
What a great pop song.
Isn't it fucking...
It's just so good.
There's nothing quite like it, is there?
No. It's great. There's a line where Shirley's like, we wrote a Shangri-La's song. It's like, yeah, you did.
Yeah.
And it rules. I guess, like Gorillaz, but I remember seeing the video for this as a kid.
Oh, what a fucking incredible
like,
video.
And then also having the moment of like being, I don't know, 13 and being like, oh, all the parts that, like, I obviously didn't know the word signifier, but like all the parts that mean girl are visible, but the person, oh, the person's invisible. I get it.
I thought you were going to be like, oh, so I saw the Gorillaz video and I was just like, oh, they're an animated van. Then I saw the Garbage video. I'm just like, oh, they're an invisible band.
Oh, that would be a great bit. If there was a band that were like, we're an invisible band and they had a whole live setup of strings or something.
And it's like that rule.
Like stupid puppetry and like empty suit on strings.
And then just like really.
There's like a sleeve in front of it, but the keyboard, the keyboard notes are being held down.
That
you're like,
rules.
How is that working? So it's like funny. A pianola roll or something. It's like, how is that working?
This band is awesome. They can have heaps of like on the nose songs, like, you know, like Nobody Sees Me or whatever.
Do a cover of I See Through You by the Beatles.
Yeah. The first time ever I saw your face.
How to Disappear Completely.
There we go.
This band rules.
Let's do it. Yeah. I'm in.
This is called? A license to print money.
We'll work on it.
We'll work on it.
What do you think, listener? Actually, great.
Mail in.
No, five star. We don't have a mailbag. You know
five
how this
star
works.
Care of your capital city.
Just drop us a five star and say like, I think the band should be called... And then say that. That's make sure you preference it. Don't just write the band name on its own.
Oh, how about like Invisible Ink, but like Incorporated?
That's good. I like it.
Okay, everyone, that's the one to beat. Five stars only.
But it's just like, it's great. It is truly like a Shangri-La song. Like it is is a perfect sugary pop song from the 60s with some very nice production as always from Garbage.
Yeah.
And then some real crunch on that guitar when they want and they
just
that chorus just soars. It's great. It's just
and then there's the bit where the bells come in.
They hit.
That hits. It's just like a bloom. Like I think the first time the guitars come in, that's like the first blooming of the song. And then you get another moment where it feels like the entire space of the song changes when that bridge hits.
Yeah.
And it's like everything you thought was sonically going on all of a sudden is elevated. It's just, do you know that's a tuba? The wap, 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 wap.
No way.
Like, it's a tuba. No, it's a tuba. It's just like altered in certain ways, but it's a tuba.
What, like through
Fuck
a MIDI? Or
it's
like?
It's a tuba.
It's a real physical tuba.
Ask Butch, it's a tuba.
Butch? Give us a five star. Let us know, was it a tuba?
Yeah, and how was it a tuba?
How is that a tuba?
Butch, just do like a mini song exploder for da tuba in a five star. Butch Vig, listener of Hottest 100s and Thousands, give us, it's about time you gave us a five star.
Yeah, well.
About the tuba.
Yeah.
Another song with an unusual structure though, because it's like all verse up until that, glorious bridge part with the bells and... Which could be a chorus in and of itself. Like, it is so good. And then the chorus doesn't happen until the last minute of the song where they repeat it out. It is a genius pop song. Like, it is so good. Like, and nice, tidy 3 minutes. Fucking love it.
Yeah, it's great.
Such a vibe. I was so just drawn to the electricity of this song, like, as a kid. It just had that bounce to it, you know. Especially at that age, you're just, like, taken by that, you know. Like, I don't think I quite understood the gender politics at 11 and 12 years old, but...
I think the politics of this song land better in 2023 than the ones of Androgyny. Are we across the kind of inspiration for the song?
Vaguely.
Because
no,
it's just like,
what? Besides the tuba?
Saw this cool invisible tuba and was like, hey. So Shirley wrote the lyrics kind of around two books written by a trans author, J.T. Leroy. The books were Sarah and The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things. They were both kind of fairly autobiographical about being a transsexual sex worker, particularly in like truck stops and places like that around, like, I think the south of the US. Then it came out like a little while after this that author was a pseudonym of a cis woman author named Laura Albert, who was writing like these fictions as...
Wow.
As autobiography or of invented persona, which is very interesting. And there was a whole lot of stuff around that. And, you know, I think Shirley, she said, I know a lot of people felt conned in the end. I didn't. I just felt sad that a woman felt she would stand a better chance in the world if she was a man and that JT was dead and wouldn't be part of my life anymore. But like the character's name is Cherry.
Oh, okay.
Like there's a whole lot of like the song is very directly inspired by those two books, which is quite interesting.
And Shirley had like direct correspondence.
Yeah, yeah. Had a lot of like email back and forth with quote unquote JT.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was like a creative partnership. Bad news for the Milwaukee Brewers in their 2001 season and even moving forward. They haven't really managed to crack sixth. So
How'd they go last year?
Let me see. 2020.
Maybe they're on a hot thing right now.
Yeah. I just wanted to see whether there was
whether they got the bump.
Divisional, second. Brewers stonks up.
The hottest bump strikes
again.
Come on,
baby. Let's go, Brewers.
We're going all the way this year.
2001 can't happen again.
It can't happen again. Come on.
I wanted to see what effect.
It's me, Coach Shirley Manson.
I just wanted to see what effect
the song
has.
It really does sound like a New York name.
You're playing like fucking garbage out there.
Oh, so really well.
All right, let's hit the showers. Girls in the boys' room. Boys in the men's room.
But truly, just a delight of a song that, like, showcases the versatility of Garbage and their production and their songwriting, and it's just, like, still a joy now. Like, I love hearing this song.
Yeah, much like The Strokes, like, fortunate that I've been away from this song for a while, that, coming in to listen to it for this, I'm like, holy fuck, there is actually so much going on, and, like, I shouldn't be surprised. Like, I love Garbage. Like, their production is always fucking stellar, but... You know, if you want to dig into this, the arrangement has got so much going on, so many layers. It's, what a delight.
That brings us to the end of yet another episode of Hottest 100s and Thousands. Thank you so much for listening. We love you. We appreciate you. Before we get out of here, we're going to pick our favorites, our least favorites, and continue the ever-continuing story of Carryover Champ and Carryover Chump. I'm going to go first. Let me show you how it's done. So for this week, I think my least favorite of the five is probably Schism. Like, I love it.
Fifth favorite. That's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it's another thing. Yeah. Where it's just like, it's the one I spent the least time loving, if that makes sense. Like the others is just like constant. My chump will remain The Shame of Life by the Butthole Surfers. But in terms of, oh man.
Well, you've managed to rule out one.
Yeah. Last night. So last night, favorite. And, well, you know, I'm already here. I'll make it my champ.
Nice.
Hey.
Whoa.
Interesting because, Schism, obvious favorite for me. And last night, and it's not, you know, chump worthy. It's just least best for me.
Yeah.
Like each of the other four songs, there was something that I found new coming back to it or something that I'd long forgotten or whatever. Last night is just, it's last night. It feels very surface to me, especially in comparison to everything else, which had something deeper going on. New champ and chump.
bold chump.
Bold. Get in, son.
I'm going to say that Cherry Lips is my favorite from this five, but it's a good five.
Done all right.
Let's just say 19-2000 is least favorite, but again, like, fifth favorite. Like, they're... None of these songs are bad. My champ will remain One More Time by Daft Punk, and my chump will remain
Little Things by Good Charlotte.
Yeah, look, I think the least favorite song when you have a five this strong is fairly arbitrary. And yeah. I will be applying the Nathan Harrison tactic, which I quite like, of like, if you had to listen to four songs, that makes Cherry Lips probably my least favorite song. My favorite is Schism for this episode. It will not be replacing my champ of At the Drive-In.
Mm. Elliot, thank you again so much for jamming with us and being part of all of this. We really, really appreciate it, man.
No, thank you. It's an absolute pleasure and privilege. And yeah, it still, boggles my mind that, you know, this podcast that I stumbled on like in 2018, 2017,
yeah,
something
right?
like that. And the history we've had since and being
yeah,
here
today.
Yeah,
turns out we're all real people.
some
and
of nice.
Some, yeah, some of us
and
live
friendly.
In, yeah, some of us live in the same city as you. Like,
no, I'm a cartoon.
Adam, and Adam I'm is invisible.
Actually, Adam is actually Hitsune Miku.
I knew that.
Yeah,
I knew
did you know that.
That.
Yeah.
Oh, Lordy.
All the pieces fit.
Yeah, there you go, everyone. Everyone who's been waiting for me to ooh-woo for the better part of a decade. You could stop texting me. There it is.
There it is.
I'm not doing it again.
No. On behalf of Mr. Adam Buncher.
Ooh-woo. I lied.
Mr. Nathan Harrison.
Ooh-woo.
His one was better. Nathan's was heaps good. Mr. Elliot J. O'Neill.
Ooh-woo.
Oh, no, I... That one was no joke.
That was horny.
That was no joke.
And on behalf of Andrew McDonald, my name is David James Young. Everything is good for ooh woo.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a weird way to end.
Yeah. Everyone's skipping back, being like, was ooh woo part of a different? Like, is that part of the garbage thing?
Pour your misery down and then get back out there.
Told you to push it. Push it real good.
Make the beats go harder. I thought you were special. Oh, I'm so sorry to Shirley.
She'll love it. She'll give it a five star.
Yeah, that's right.
American football coach Shirley Mason is my favorite of your SNL characters.
Thank you.
Yeah. It'll go far.
Come on, baby.